Chris, what is happening in the world?
Oh, man. What isn't happening?
Things have been wild. And I told you this right before the call started. I'm going to repeat it because this is my favorite thing ever. I'm not going to say why, and you can look up the reason why, but Twitter is discontinuing their direct messaging feature, according to the Wall Street Journal. And if you find the reason out why, it will make you laugh and then sad and then annoyed. It's the funniest thing I've read on the internet today.
Every news thing like that and everything going on this year just feels like could be Onion articles.
Yeah.
No.
They're putting the Onion out of work, bro.
Everything is unbelievable.
The joke isn't funny anymore.
Right. What have you been up to? So I've been in Brazil, then let's see, Brazil, then Philly, then Chicago, then Vegas. And now I'm home. Thank God. It was a long 2 weeks. It was fun 2 weeks. Don't get me wrong. Lots of fun. I'm glad to be home.
I am too. We went to a conference together, but before we get into that, you want to talk about the Brazil and Philly?
Yeah. Tropical on rails was awesome. I've never been to South America, so that was super fun. Didn't get to see a lot of Brazil, though. Got the ride from the airport to the hotel and saw, you know, maybe one or two blocks around the hotel. Surprisingly, not as easy to get around because not that many people speak English, mostly Portuguese. It was interesting to go to South America and then I feel like a fish out of water. Don't know how to order food at a restaurant or whatever, but it was a blast. Production quality and everything at the conference was phenomenal. 650 people or something there at Tropical. They sold out all their tickets in 6 hours. The excitement was there. It felt like a mini Rails World. It was awesome. Single track, 2 days, lots of good speakers. My favorite part, because people either didn't speak English or Portuguese, they had live translations with headphones and a real person in the back translating. That was phenomenal. That alone felt just really high bar. You were there, didn't speak Portuguese, but didn't have any trouble at all understanding what was going on at the conference. That I thought was really well done. And I think they stepped that up because last year they tried to do AI translations that were not very good and decided, let's just do it right. And I'm sure it cost a bit more, but it was super good quality. So can't wait. I'd love to go back.
I'm always amazed by people who can live translate like that, the translator themselves, because for me, number one, my brain's broken. But number two, I have this issue where if I'm talking and I hear, especially if I hear myself talking, it's over. It's completely over. My brain just short circuits. But if I'm trying to listen and talk at the same time, the wires just get so crossed. And I can't even imagine doing it, listening in one language and speaking in another, dude. That's superior brain power.
Yeah, it's impressive. It was one of the best conferences, that I've been to. The production quality on everything was phenomenal. So yeah, then I flew back home Saturday, had Sunday at home. Monday left early in the morning to go to Philly. Got to go walk around, have some cheesesteaks, met up with Drew Bragg and Ufuk. That night we had beers nearby the hotel. That was a good place that we'll have on the list for RailsConf. And then we went through the hotel and the venue and everything for RailsConf, which was the Sheraton downtown in Philadelphia. And I think we've got kind of most of the things rented out for the conference. So it's two floors. The top floor will have the big ballroom and everything. And then that's where registration will be and all the sponsor booths. And then the breakout rooms are on the middle floor. And it's got a little less hallway space and stuff, but it'll be nice because there's a restaurant and a bar on the main floor, in the hotel lobby. So when you go up the escalators or whatever, you're guaranteed to bump into people and, catch them for going to dinner or whatever it is. So I think it'll be a good layout for running into people in the hallway track and stuff like that, which is always my top thing of every conference. So I think it'll be good. I mean, it's a Sheraton, so it's got the hotel vibes, which, it would be cooler to have it in a neat space instead of the carpeted hotel conference room vibes, but you know what? We got what we got. And the budget is nuts for that. But, you know, honestly, the best part about those two are that, like, Tropical was in the hotel, so I could run upstairs, drop my bag off, like, easy access to, same with Sin City and the MGM, like, easy to go back to your room, take a break if you need to, whatever. It sucks to be away from the hotel far enough that, like, it's a trip to go back and you just don't end up being able to take your stuff or whatever. So I really do like that experience at conferences, and it does maybe sacrifice a little bit of the vibes because it's a hotel, but you know, it is what it is. I think it's worth it. Makes it a lot more family friendly too. And yeah, that was a busy couple days. And then Monday I got in, Tuesday we did the walkthrough, and I was going to leave Tuesday evening or late afternoon. I forget when, but my flight got delayed because I was going to go drop off stuff at home in St. Louis and then fly out the next day to Sin City. But with the flight being delayed, I was not going to be home for like more than 4 or 5 hours. And I was like, yeah, maybe I'll move it up to this like earlier flight. Tried that. It got delayed. Then it had a layover in Chicago, which I missed, and then got to spend the night in Chicago. So I still need to go deal with that and demand American Airlines give me at least a partial refund for that mess. That was not fun. Then Vegas was fun.
Yeah.
That MGM Conference Center is like a mile walk away from the.
That's why I laughed and you were like, yeah, it was really easy, like the MGM and stuff. I was like, bro, like, where did you black out on that 8 mile walk through the hotel?
Yeah. I thought it was cool, a long walk. It was like nice though, you know, like it's the MGM. You don't have to go see sunlight or anything outside.
There's a whole ecosystem in there.
Yeah. Tons of restaurants, tons of everything you can need, which was nice. Did have to make our trip to Target to buy some clothes.
I met you in the airport and the first thing you're like, I need to go shopping. And I'm like, bet.
And I was like, I've been wearing these clothes for way too long. And the funny thing was like the weather went from like super cold and windy in Philly to like really cold in Chicago, and then Vegas
down my
like
way
90 degrees or something. So it was quite the trip. I am very glad to be home though. Although I'm home and I'm working on Stripe updates, and I maybe would rather be at a conference than dealing with those updates.
Understandable and real. I know you want to talk about your Stripe stuff. When you were like, I got so much Stripe stuff to talk about today, I was like, my life, bro, my freaking life. Everywhere I go, I see its face. Conference was a ton of fun. So you gave a talk on Hotwire. Jason gave a vibe coding talk, which I really enjoyed. There were a bunch of really good speakers and talks, and it was a good vibe, dude. Like, I had a ton of fun in Vegas.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was just nice to like wander around, and Vegas is an entertaining city for sure.
I found out that Golden Nugget's worth like multiple millions, and I was like, oh,
it's crazy.
It didn't really look like it. It looked robbable. So I was surprised to see the amount of numbers in that million. I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a replica that they have on display.
Surely, like the right? Declaration of Independence, surely.
Yeah. What else did we do? I forget. It was kind of short because it was just 2 days.
Well, so I stayed longer, and then
Right.
On Saturday, Jason, Drew, and I rented a Mustang convertible and just drove. We went to Red Rock Canyon Park, and we went to the Hoover Dam and a bunch of places in between. Just kind of cruise, dude, with the top down. It's nice.
Yeah, that would have been fun. I would have loved to stay for that, but.
And then we went to the Vegas Golden Knights game that night, hockey game, which was a ton of fun. It was a buzzer beater.
I would have loved to see too. There's so many like shows and other things you can do that are awesome in Vegas. And that's one where I like the idea of going someplace and taking an extra day or two and just hanging out in the city and not having to go to the talks or whatever and just exploring the city. That'll be fun because it was the same thing at Sin City. It was like, okay, it's lunchtime or whatever. Same with RailsConf. It'll be like go out on the town, go explore the city, experience it. You've got time to go somewhere and come back and whatever, which will be great. because catered lunches and stuff allow you to squeeze in more talks or whatever, but it doesn't give you the experience of where you're at, which I really like. And Tropical was the same way, actually. Went out to lunch and stuff, which can be tough, you know, if there's 600 people or whatever going to restaurants. But Vegas can handle that. It was totally fine. And Sao Paulo and Philly will be the same way. Like, there are so many restaurants that are very walkable. And the deceiving thing on the map is, like, the Philly city blocks are pretty small. You look at the map in Vegas and it's like, oh, the conference center is pretty close. And then it's like 20 minute walk inside the same building. And you're like, wait a minute, this is wild. Yeah, like, everything cool. is massive. But I like that a lot. I felt like all three of those got to spend enough time in the city walking around a little bit.
It was fun to hang out, like, you, me, and Chris. I mean, Drew was there too, but he's not included in this podcast, so forget him. It was fun for the three of us to hang out. I felt like we hadn't done that in a long... I don't remember the last conference we were all at. Rails World, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. And usually at those, like, I don't get to hang out with you guys at all. So
yeah, because
nice
you guys are usually speaking. So here was the thing that was different. Usually Jason is incredibly stressed out for his talks to the point where I'm like, yeah, you're bumming me out, bro.
I feel
this
that.
Time he was not like that at all. I told him after, I was like, this, I feel like, is one of your best talks. And if you weren't there, you missed it because it was not recorded. But we were all in a good mood, like, the pretty much the whole week. So that was fun.
Yeah, he had a whole talk just using Claude CLI to build a slot machine game in Ruby and just vibe coded the whole thing. It was funny.
When he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to make a graphical interface. I was like, how the hell are you going to do that, bro? But bro did it.
When production breaks, you want to quickly understand and fix it, not sift through logs for the next hour. That's where Honey Badger comes in. Honey Badger notifies you of errors and outages and puts performance in context to help you fix the issue faster. Learn more at honeybadger.io. That's www.honeybadger.io. Gosu is a 2D game development library in Ruby and C++.
It's super cool. Never heard of that.
I've never used it myself. 2D graphics powered by OpenGL, sounds and music.
There's so much math involved in that. That's what was wild to me. Like, having done some game development, I knew how much math was going on in the back end, and you could kind of see, like, occasionally, like, some math trickle through, like, the Claude output. But I was like, it was a fully functional working slot game machine. It was very impressive. The fact that it worked on the first time, even though it wasn't like some super, like, amazingly, like, full featured thing, but it slot machined itself on the first try. I was like, dude, that is impressive.
Yeah, it was functional almost the entire time, just towards the end where there was like a refactoring it did that, like, created a real class or some referenced one that didn't exist. Then it just made an empty class to fix it. And then it was like, no, actually, you got to fix it properly. Then it worked again. And the whole time, yeah, it was pretty wild. And some of it was like, you know, raining coins or whatever. And that wasn't super performant, but like, weren't going to expect it to do that anyways. Like,
I mean, he didn't have to write.
It was functional.
Do you think of how hard it would be to code that coin animation, bro? Oh my God. The math, bro. Like, the fact that it worked, though, was crazy.
Yeah, because you would have to go grab that from, like, some other example of, like, confetti and convert it to raining coins or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was 2D. Like, if it was 3D, it would be even more complex.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it had animations and sound and all kinds of stuff. It was awesome. Yeah, it really was impressive. And I felt, since I had given my keynote in Brazil, I gave the same talk there, and it was much easier to just give that talk in Sin City again. I had the unfortunate after lunch slot on the second day after Jason's talk. So I was tired. Everybody else was tired. Like, that slot is not the best one for energy, but it worked out. It turned out good. It was fun chatting with Dave Thomas. Really awesome guy. Super excited for his new books, Simplicity.
I think so.
Yeah.
I kind of came in because of the schedule. That's my one complaint with Jason Sweat and his tendencies, which are very similar to mine. So I understand, but it's like when someone else does it, I'm like, ugh. But where they had a socialization event on the first day, And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. So I'll come in when the first talk starts. So I arrived directly when the first talk starts. Guess what happened when I walked in? The socialization event. I was like, damn it. And then the second day, Drew was like, are you coming? I'm like, yeah, I'll be at Arena's talk. And I showed up 30 minutes late, I guess, because she started early. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I looked over and saw you and I was like, uh-oh, you weren't supposed to be here for this.
You saw me walk back in, like, bro, just fumbled so hard. I was like much more prepared to deal with people after I like got a meal.
Yeah, in the morning, it was like, they had some typical like fruit and pastries as breakfast and stuff. And like,
that doesn't work.
I needed real breakfast, you know, like I want some bacon and eggs.
I eat like a super high protein, like breakfast. Like I like have protein oatmeal and eggs and like non-fat, like Greek yogurt. So I'm used to these very like dense protein breakfasts. And so getting offered like a yogurt, I was like, this is not going to work for me. And my schedule is already so screwed up because like I'm used to like waking up early and then going to bed early. And now I'm waking up at like 8, which is not late, but like waking up later and then going to sleep at like midnight. My schedule is still not recovered.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, I assume this is more the culture in Brazil, but like Tropical started at 10 a.m. for my talk, my opening keynote, and it went to like 7 or 8 p.m. And I was like, dang, it was nice to sleep in, but also like, man, feels real late. But getting those different schedules is strange because, yeah, I'm up early and go to bed early and stuff. And it's like, now it's all shifted 3-4 hours, something like that. Depends on the day. But yeah, feels real off.
Anything else about that before we talk about the devil himself?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that was the last Sin City Ruby.
Yeah.
But it may come back maybe more in Michigan, hopefully, or something.
He said that the first year too, and he was going to do it in Michigan, and then it didn't happen in Michigan. He went back to Vegas.
Yeah. I mean, Vegas is a good place for, because I feel like if you're going to organize something, you want to also plan the outside conference activity type stuff. And like Vegas is easy to let people loose on. But if you were to like come to St. Louis or something, like I could have a few places to tell you to go check out, like go, you know, to a Cardinals game or St. Louis Blues game or the City Museum or something. But there's kind of a limited list of things that you could go do or whatever. And I feel like Vegas is a good attraction for a lot of people. Yeah.
It's the only conference that's ever near me. So I love it because I have the option to drive or like take a 45-minute flight.
Yeah, it was a quick flight for you.
Yeah.
Super nice.
Loved it.
Yeah. The only downside was like MGM was expensive as hell. So
bro, I got invoice and I like choked.
That was the fun thing about going to Brazil was like if you go to the store and like grab a soda, the price on the shelf you divide by 6 to get the rough US dollar amount.
And it was like, you multiply by 3.
It was nuts. I grabbed the bottle of water from Target and it was like $2.50. And I was like, that seems kind of cheap. And then got the same bottle of water in the MGM and it was like $8 or over or something. It's like, good Lord.
Now, when I was walking through the casino and I heard, because like I'm a big water drinker and like obviously they're not just slinging free water out there in Vegas because everything is like, how much can we suck you dry for? And I walked past one of those vendors and I was like, how much is the water? And he's like, $7.50. And I was like, oh, okay, bet. And then I walked up to my hotel room and filled my water bottle up in the sink. And I was like, bro, I'm drinking sink water. I'm not paying $7.50. There's no like, you know what? It's going to hurt. My health is going to be hurt worse by me paying $7.50 than me drinking the sink water.
Because God forbid you use, if you want to use a refrigerator that costs money. But our secret tip was to get a medical refrigerator and just ask for one of those when you check in because it's free.
Yes.
So there you go.
Because there was a sign on the refrigerator that was like, if you store food in this refrigerator, we charge you. It was like, oh, okay. So this is like a decorative refrigerator. I like almost started to open it and like Drew like caught my hand. He's like, don't open that.
Yeah. Cause I think didn't Jason say he opened it and got charged for it or somebody said that.
I thought I got charged for it, but it ended up being something at a bar that I charged to the room. But I was like, there's no freaking way that they charged me for like the inch I opened it before closing it back.
Yeah, they're like, oh, done. We have proof. That stuff was so insane. Yeah, if they're that bad about just individual hotel stays, then you can extrapolate on how much they nickel and dime for conference organizers and stuff like that. Like, it is gotta be horrible. And I think that was the nice part about the Tropicana, was an old place. They were happy to do the smaller events and stuff. Like, we had one little room in one of many hallways in that conference center that it was just empty otherwise, except for some big conference. I don't know if it was the Google one. Google Cloud had one there. I didn't know if that was at the MGM too or not.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I'm sure, crazy expensive for the like tiny little room we got and everything. But, you know, they did have like, I guess it was a flat fee for the bar and probably for the food and stuff in the mornings and the drinks. But it was like, they only had a limited number of sodas and waters that they put out. And then like, that was it. And I'm sure that cost an arm and a leg for those things. And it turned out great. I just feel like it's not sustainable for 100-person conference at a place like that. It's just too expensive. And
yeah,
I love the size though, and like how casual it was, because it was designed to give you a lot of time to talk to the other attendees and stuff. And we got to hang out the entire time, which is awesome, because I don't get that luxury as much anymore. But
he's way too famous, everyone. That's what he's letting y'all know.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. Amsterdam was ridiculous. And then Brazil was the same way, like nonstop people saying hi and asking for photos and stuff. And like, maybe I took a couple photos in Sid City, but that was about it.
Oh my God, you just triggered me. Jason told me that I needed to change my job title to Chris's cameraman. People would kept walking up to me and handing me their phone and be like, yo, take this picture. I'm like, all right, bet. But I'm a good photo taker, so I don't care. I'm like, yeah. I got the ankles, like, we're good.
Oh yeah, the stickers that Jason made.
Yeah. Jason got a sticker machine and like a shirt press, and I was like, I'm going to send y'all some orders. I got stuff I want.
Shannon and Jason made me a GoRails t-shirt because I planned to come home and swap my clothes out and stuff, and then had just two blank Target t-shirts to wear instead. So they made me a GoRails, custom GoRails t-shirt, which is great.
That's what he gave you. I wasn't sure what he gave you. I saw him give that to you. I was like, I figured that was like a shirt for Jackson or something. I don't know.
It was one for me to wear the second day for the for my talk.
I need a remote Ruby shirt.
We need to do that.
I wonder how much we have to bribe Shannon to do that.
Good question.
We need to market the podcast because someone went to two conferences and didn't mention it.
We'll have to do that.
What happens when a developer decides to record his own podcast ad? Let's find out. I'm Adam from Judo Scale. And at Judo Scale, there's no marketing team, no salespeople, and no customer support. I mean, we do have customer support, but it's just us, the developers. That's why our support is top-notch. Anyway, we're Judo Scale. We're the autoscaler that actually works. We do it better than anyone else by tracking the right metrics and checking those metrics more frequently. And we wrap it all in a beautiful UI with powerful and intuitive controls. We work with hosting platforms like Heroku, Render, and Amazon ECS to gracefully handle your traffic spikes and backed up job queues. If you want that peace of mind and a much lower hosting bill, you should check us out. Visit judoscale.com/remoteruby for your special gift as a Remote Ruby listener. That's judoscale.com/remoteruby.
I did get my talk submitted for Rails World. I didn't put a ton of time into it, but I do feel like I had a much better appreciation for the talk submissions after reviewing all those for RailsConf. So fingers crossed I put in a bit better submission than I would have before, but I'm like not terribly worried if I don't get it.
We have a retreat coming up at Podia. We always do like a developer activity, and like one year we made like bracelets, or like we've done like games and stuff. Like, it's always a fun time. And this year, Jamie's like, I'm going to hold our own little developer conference. So you have to submit a CFP to me and you have to give a 10-minute talk. And I was like, okay. And I was thinking about it and I was like, let's talk about Turbo. Because I'm like, after seeing your talk and getting like halfway through your course, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to talk about this. It seems a lot easier to steal Chris's content than to make my own.
Man, we've gotten a ton of good feedback on the course and the talk too. It's like, there's just so many weird edges and nuances to wrapping your head around Hotwire. Like, I start off the conference talk like, here, Hotwire is these three things. Simple, right? And like, yeah. Actually, no. And that sort of sets the tone of like, yeah, you know, the word turbo stream, it's a loaded term. Like, it really means a whole bunch of details and other little things that are named turbo streams that are adjacent to what you normally think of. And it's a lot.
So tell me what you think about the talk title. Decompose with turbo. No, like, actually this time.
I like it.
Yeah, I thought I was cooking with that. Maybe we've talked about it, but I was taking your course and I watched like maybe half. And then I didn't watch any of the stimulus videos. I watched a bunch of the, like, I went through the turbo dialogue one because you were like, start with that. And so I started with that and I was like, this is really interesting, but I already have a dialogue like situation and I hate modals in general. So yeah, this is whatever. Right. However, there was one very specific thing that you mentioned in, I can't remember if it was that video or in a different video, but it was about like the way like turbo redirects like happen where you're supposed to send a 303 response.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? And all of a sudden things that have happened started clicking and I was like, wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
That's what I need to be doing.
It's hilarious to like look at this stuff now because the rail scaffolds were just like 200 okay for errors and everything and a regular, you know, 302 redirect for success and all that, which is fine until we actually use fetch in the browser. And then fetch is like, well, we're going to stick to the rules. And that happens to be that when you do a 302, if you made a delete request, it's going to send the delete to another, the route that you redirect to, which can be very unexpected when you're like looking at the RailsOx and you're like, wait a minute, what? How did that happen? And yeah, it's funny because like we do, for the most part, have enough abstraction around HTTP that like on a regular basis, you don't worry about it too much. You're just like, all right, render this, redirect here. You don't even worry too much about your HTTP statuses most of the time, but it can be pretty important.
Yeah, it definitely can be. I fixed like a bug or two after watching that video.
Yep. So we talked about Stripe. I haven't paid attention to the last couple major API changes, like the Bazel, whatever version, 14 or something it is. I don't know if you've looked into that much.
Bazel's the name of a guy who used to work at Podia that I met at a conference.
Who is awesome, by the way.
Who is a dope human being, yeah.
For like all of our products, they're pretty much all on subscriptions and we don't have one-time purchases for almost anything except for the course. And so one of the things that we've been like dealing with is like Stripe has adaptive pricing. And I'm wondering if this changed recently too. So what happens is normally like if you pay with Brazilian dollars or whatever, then it will show up on our account as paid in Brazilian or Mexican or Canadian dollars, whatever, any currency. The currency will get converted on their back end. So the record shows like the pesos that you paid, but then in our database, we will end up saving that. And I was just like summing those together. So someone paid in Australian dollars and whatever. And like our dashboard showed the wrong number because it was like way inflated because it was these other currencies. So you have this balance transaction, which will be the thing that records the conversion rate and stuff and shows your Stripe account's bank account currency. So I went and was like, I'll have to start importing those. So I updated Pay to start recording the balance transactions. Only to just the other day have somebody who was like, yeah, I paid in Canadian dollars. And I look in Stripe and it's not. It's paid in USD and the record is in USD. But then there's this new presentment details and it shows that it was presented to him in Canadian dollars and records it there, but actually saves in USD for the charge. And so now there's apparently two different ways of doing that. And I don't actually know why one is recorded in Australian dollars and this other one is USD, but it was shown to him in Canadian dollars. No idea. So that's fun. So that got me going down the rabbit hole only to find out that like taxes have changed. The invoice period has been moved from the invoice itself to the line items. Even though if you try to create it like a subscription, you can't have multiple periods on there. They have to all be like monthly or annual. So I'm like, they're planning something there to support multiple periods or whatever for multiple items on your subscriptions. And I guess officially gotten rid of and deprecated the like usage record metered billing stuff that we had in the past. So I gotta go update Hatchbox to use the new meters for reporting, which I think should be fine, but they changed a whole bunch of stuff. You know, looking back at some of these, it's like, it's been a long time since they did a lot of breaking changes. And I'm like, oh boy, this is fun. So I've been in the middle of like updating pay. But the question that Carl and I were talking about before we jumped on this podcast was like, so if we want to store some of this data like we have in the past, it used to be this like, you know, a charge was associated to an invoice, but now you can't do that. Invoices have multiple payments now. So the charge and invoice association is gone. You have to use this invoice payments join table and then query that. Then that is also linked to payment intents instead of charges directly. So you've got now more complexity there. It's fun. So I was like, what of this data do we try to save so that you don't have to hit the API when we sync stuff down? Versus if the data changes, then do we have to keep track of the backwards compatible stuff we've already got in your database and the new formatted stuff that Stripe is giving us? And then our code has to just be infinitely backwards compatible, which sounds awful because the data isn't necessarily always the same or existent as sometimes or whatever. And so I am in the middle of deciding of like, do we just do it non-backwards compatible, but just have you go back through every charge in your database and like resync it so you have like the latest version of that? Because when you pull these things down from the API, like the attributes you used to have are gone. Like the charge invoice is not there anymore, for example. The trade-off of like maintaining backwards compatible code versus like, all right, you could hit the API for all this stuff, but there may be a period of time where the data in your database is a little out of sync, which isn't going to be great, but also like it shouldn't take that long to sync all yours. Transact or something, but scale of Podia is, for us it's not, but for a scale of Podia, yeah.
I was like, so, no way do I want to do that. And then there's, you have to deal with the rate limiting that Stripe has and the back and I can keep going. Like that sounds so bad. I don't want to do that, especially because what I've seen before too is like maybe one of those records is gone. For instance, like on Podia we have courses, right? What if a student paid for a course, but then the person who made that course deleted
the course. Yeah.
And now we're like, how do we get that data now?
Yeah. It's awful. Yeah. And one of the little things that we have that for you, definitely white labeling things is ideal just to keep things simple. We may start using the billing portal on Stripe more often or the customer portal, but it's not great either. But there's
billing or checkout because they're different.
The customer portal, like manager subscription section.
Okay.
Because not every purchase you make is using an invoice. You may purchase the Learn Hotwire course and we can just like make a charge for it without invoicing for it because we can make our own invoices. The problem becomes if we're only syncing our payment intents or charges, then the invoices that are created to like give you a credit, like swapping plans or changing your team size or something. Sometimes there will be an invoice that doesn't create a charge because it was completely free or whatever. Then we may not see those. And syncing all that stuff just gets forever more complex to maintain and pay. And I'm like, I don't really want to have to introduce an invoice table that we also have to sync or whatever, but maybe we do eventually. I don't know. So it's one of those times where I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? This is just infinite edge cases and complexity and other stuff. To keep up to date with Stripe in the future, we'll end up with, they'll change more things. We'll have some data for some records, then things will be out of date if we don't update those records. So how do we like keep that in check and whatever? One of the solutions we had was like, you know, maybe when you download your invoice or receipt PDF, we could check like the timestamp and say, oh, the record in the database hasn't been updated since 2023. So let's sync it, and then we'll pull in all the latest data from the Stripe API at the time it's referenced or used. So we wouldn't have to kick off a job to like go update all the data that we have cached. And maybe we just also go grab the freaking things from the API every time when you want to do that. It may be a fraction of a second slower or something, but maybe that's the way to do it.
We do that in several places, especially like with the webhook stuff. It's like, yeah, but something could have changed in between. And I ran into this specifically where I was like, why is this webhook coming in when this other one should be still processing? It's not done yet, but now they're coming in an order where I'm like, oh crap. Now this data is not going to be there. This could potentially come in. That data won't be updated in our database. So I ended up reaching back out to Stripe, which pained me, but it's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I hate doing that, because if we can keep our local cache copies, then we can render stuff way faster and whatever. But like, if it takes a fraction of a second more to render an invoice or receipt or something, then like, okay, that's not so bad. Not terribly worried about it. But yeah, it's been giving me good questions of like, we used to go through and when you sync a charge, keep track of like all the refunds and other things like that. But like, do we really need to store that in the charge record? Or if you want to break down the refunds, maybe that's a good time to make an API call. So I've been trying to slim down pay a little bit for those types of things. Cause it's like, when we sync the charge, we could grab every single refund and then cache it in the JSON column and just have it there forever. But the data that people actually need to see most of the time is just the amount that was refunded. It's either zero or some number up to the amount. And that's more what people are looking for. So I've found some of those decisions that we were doing in the past were like breaking out the line items and assigning them to a line items array. Like, well, what if we just store the invoice and you can pull out the line items yourself or whatever? Let's just do that instead. I think it's going to turn out a little bit easier to maintain, but we're going to chop a few sort of features like that. We've done too much in a way to like abstract the Stripe, Braintree, Lemon Squeezy, Paddle, all the differences there and try to build our own little interface on top. And it's like, I don't mind at this point exposing more of the raw stuff. Because the other thing that's really awesome with the Stripe Ruby gem, they have a construct from, and you give it a Ruby hash, and you can just say, here's a Stripe invoice, construct it from this Ruby hash, and it will be able to do that. And that's awesome. That saves a ton of trouble. And we can just like cache the JSON version of these charges or invoices and then recreate them. And then you have all the helpers of like, okay, the invoice has multiple line items. Go through those. Then if you need to make extra API requests because you have an invoice with more than 10 line items or whatever it is, then like, great, do that as you need, but we'll just save like the default list of things. So I have a feeling that'll be a bit better, easier to maintain in the long run, but man, it is never ending work.
You haven't brought up the worst thing that Stripe did recently that I think is just a crime to humanity, really. They added a bunch of extra padding on the subscriptions. Like when you view like a customer, they added padding on their subscriptions and it really is pissing me off. Like when you view a customer and you can see
in their dashboard,
when you see a list of the subscriptions, they added like a ton of padding to those. Like they're really nice condensed items because we have a situation where a lot of people, like you're going to have at least three subscriptions if you are an active customer on Podia. And you'll have inactive ones, like when you move from a trial to a paid plan, like we cancel all the trial stuff and then move you to a completely new subscription, which is stupid, but we have to. And now when I go look at a customer dashboard, I'm like, put the padding back.
That's funny. Yeah.
It's not funny to me, bro.
Yeah, it is interesting. I haven't seen this either. Related guest payments. It's able to see that it was like a guest customer.
What the hell is a guest customer?
This is interesting. The prefix on these are GCUS underscore. I guess those are probably people that went straight through like a Stripe checkout without having a customer ID set or something.
I thought checkout creates the customer.
Yeah, I thought I did too. Now that you mention it,
I don't want to talk about this, bro. Stop. You're pissing me off.
It's starting to piss me off over now. Here. This is the stuff that is like finding the right balance of what your integration should be is really tough. Also interesting that when you check out the changelog for these API changes, it's interesting because it says like, we're removing some support for creating new coupons using amount off, like $50 off with a forever duration and applying these to subscriptions, subscription items, blah, blah, blah. It says, why is this a breaking change? And it says, we're removing the ability to do that. And that is why it's a breaking change, because we're removing it. It's like, okay, yeah, but what is the actual reasoning? Why is $50 off forever not a thing you can put on a subscription? Because there's some actual reasoning behind the scenes that they don't actually explain in their changelog. And like, it just is very annoying because you're like, okay, but why? Like, we've used this in the past and now it's just not a thing anymore. But you don't really tell us why. And that's been really weird to like read through some of these things. Because the why is, yeah, we remove stuff. Like, duh, of course, but weird little things. Replaces upcoming invoice API methods with the create preview invoice. And it just sounds like a better name or something. But why is this a breaking change? Because the upcoming invoice APIs are no longer available. Yeah, okay, no shit.
I feel like you literally are making work for me right now. Like, I feel like these are things, like you're saying words. I'm like, that sounds familiar. Like in our code base, like, are we going to have a problem?
I know. And I feel like it's been so long since they introduced a lot of breaking changes that like I've taken it for granted that there were a lot of things that just were fine and consistent for so long. And then it seems like this last March 31st release is the one that really introduced a lot of stuff. So yeah, have fun. Get into it before it's too painful, I guess. It seems like they're prepping a lot of things for a lot more changes in the future too, but yikes.
Shout out to the maintenance task gem. It's about to get some work.
Seriously. I don't know what their... So Acacia was September 30th, but then they continued doing changes through February 24th or maybe later 2024. Like Acacia only had a couple of breaking changes, it looks like, but Bazel is like quite a few.
What are these names, bro? Like, chill out, Apple.
They're going for the Ubuntu naming release.
It's super easy to read those types of versioning numbers.
It's just one of those things where like the deeper integration you have with an API, the more dependent you are on it, the more painful your life is going to be in the long term.
Codependency issues, bro.
Seriously. I don't know necessarily that using something even like Lago, have you seen that open source? So it's conceptually like Stripe billing, but it's an open source service that you run. And then it manages the subscriptions and does one-time payments with different backends. So you could use Stripe or you could use, I don't know, Paddle or whatever. It was like a Y Combinator startup.
They monetized your gem.
Yeah. Like, I don't quite understand. They have a premium version that has probably features you actually need. It's weird because it's one of those two where it's like, yeah, it's free and open source, but not. Because you can use our cloud or self-hosted premium version, and then you got to contact us for pricing. And, you know, it sucks because it's like, well, I can't trust that. Why wouldn't I just go straight to Stripe or whatever? And I think maybe there's a little bit of a pitch to sell you on something like it, because it's like, well, if Stripe pisses you off, you can swap over to some other backend. Well,
I have a good reason for that, actually. So there's certain countries that Stripe doesn't work with, right? Or that's currencies, yeah. And things like that. There are like times where we have the ability to pay on Podia with Stripe, but you can also pay with PayPal. And right. Like the only reason we have that, I believe, is because Stripe does not cover everyone. If you are like a Stripe customer and they kick you off the platform, I can understand why you would want to like fall back to another payment provider, because like, I want your money. We're going to get it one way or another. We might have to go through every payment service. We're going to get that money.
That's a fairly standard thing, I think, that some big companies will attempt to run your payment a few times with different backends if one fails or whatever. And I don't know. It just feels like one of those things that is incredibly, incredibly painful. And I was telling Colin, it was like, the work we do to integrate with Stripe does not help make us money as a business. Like, we don't get to work on making content and improving Jumpstart or Hatchbox or whatever when we're spending all this time working on Stripe integrations. And it's like, is it worth it? Or should we just delegate the emails and then also the billing portal and checkout, like just redirect to them for the hosted versions for like everything?
We do that now. Not if you're checking out, like if you're selling a course and I'm paying for your course, that not then, but if you are a Podia user.
If I'm paying for Podia.
If you're paying itself, for Podia, yeah. we always use the hosted versions now.
We have the embedded version of checkout, but like it doesn't.
We have that on our actual checkout.
Yeah, it doesn't totally handle things well. Like there's no easy way to swap dark mode out on it or whatever. There's apparently some UI mode of custom for checkout sessions now, but I was trying to look into that earlier and I think it was kind of similar. It was like, it's not totally fleshed out, I think. So maybe we redirect. If we just redirect, let them handle everything, you send us back.
Not to give Stripe credit, but using like the hosted checkouts is kind of nice. Like where, cause all you have to do is create a checkout session, which returns a URL, then you redirect the customer to that URL, and then Stripe will send them back to wherever you want them to be afterwards.
Right, which is how the embedded checkout works too. It's like a JavaScript redirect after completion. So it's pretty much the same thing, which is nice. So we should be able to swap either direction on that. The thing that's kind of annoying is like you want to have like a billing section in your UI, but then you also need a button to like the billing portal and it feels redundant and whatever. And I really still would love all this to be on the same domain, all nice and clean and like white labeled, but all the little details of like, well, really, we probably should be also syncing invoices. And then that way we can display the list of invoices instead of the charges. But we have to be able to do a display of charges in case you made a charge outside of an invoice and associated it with a product through metadata on the charge. And like, well, how am I going to deal with that? And I don't know, is it worth it to like try to build all that or just say, hey, you know, here's your billing portal. Stripe has a list of all your payments there. There you go. And I don't know if they like have two ways of doing that. And, you know, this charge is not associated with an invoice. So let's build a similar looking receipt for it or something. But good Lord, the complexity of all this stuff is just, especially when you look at there's orders and order items with Lemon Squeezy and now invoices and whatever. And they're still built on top of Stripe, and big mistake trying to make pay support all of these. But honestly, like every one of those integrations are pretty much, here's the hosted version, here's their billing portal, and that's it. Feel like they're all ending up going that direction because it's just way easier. And at the end of the day, like the business, if you're a small team like us, or even a medium-sized team, it's still better to just have all of the payments managed by the third-party service who are always going to have that up to date and working. It's also going to probably have the newest features and stuff that you don't have to worry about like recreating yourself. So I don't know. And it dealing with little things like the currencies and whatever, like people will get an invoice with the expected displayed currency where now I'm going to have to go like, look at the charge, look at the invoice, compare to see if it was presented in a different currency. Then when we generate the invoice, we really need to display that and whatever quantities and all these other little nuances that I'm like, I would rather be working on things for my customers that were actually of value, that they were screencasts or their features or whatever. And here I am spending a stupid amount of time on everything else. So it's just one of those things where, oh, you could go down this rabbit hole forever and ever. But as developers, it's important for us to think about those like business effects of like, we could build this out. We could make it all perfect, but it could then break in 6 months or a year. And then what was the value in that for the business? it's important for us to think about those things as like, tell your boss, hey, it seems like we can do all this, but it might be a ton of work. Let me go spike it out and see. And then let's make a better decision once we know this is going to be way too much or way too complicated or whatever. Maybe it's worth it. Maybe it's not.
That reminds me of something Jamie said to me the other day. I was born a tightwad. I'm not ridiculously cheap. I consider myself generous, but I'm cheap. Like, sure. The water story is a perfect example. Right? I'm going to drink sink water or hose water for pay $7 for a water bottle. And I was looking into something the other day and I messaged Jamie and I was like, hey, what are the odds on like spinning up a box and like letting me put this thing on it and like blah, 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 blah. And he's like, can't we just pay for someone to host that? Isn't there just a service out there we can pay instead of like doing all that stuff you just mentioned? And I was like, I kind of just sat there like dumbfounded, like, you want to pay for something?
Yeah.
And that, but it's like, it makes a ton of sense. And that's why he's the CTO and I am not, because I'm like, well, yeah, me spending all this time spinning up a server and then putting this self-hosted thing on it and making sure that works and then maintaining that, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, yeah, he's probably right. We probably could find something to pay for.
I feel the same way. Like, as a developer, I have the tendency to like, let's just do the cheapest free build ourselves or whatever, but it's not always the right call or whatever. Oh yeah, that's what I was looking at. Yeah, look at the Stripe docs. But one of the things that we end up with that's a little confusing is like, if we use the billing portal or the hosted version, you're on Hatchbox, but the company's GoRails. And so like when you go get a link to there, we want to display the Hatchbox logo. It still needs to say GoRails LLC or whatever, but there's like configurations and stuff for the billing portals and whatever that I want to be able to change so that we use the Jumpstart logo or whatever on the correct product. And it is confusing.
It is.
I feel like there was some sort of API or something to create custom like billing portal configurations.
All right. Well, now but there's just no UI ridiculous.
For it. Yeah.
I don't want an API to do that.
Well, that was what I thought was weird, was like there was an API to like configure the billing portal session or something, but like no way to do that in the UI. Cause I was like, I just want to create like these three, swap the logos out, and it looked like maybe I could do it or something from the API, but not the other. I don't know. Fun times.
Before we wrap this up, if you are listening to this podcast and made it this far and you know or are writing a gem or are writing integrations dealing with Model Context Protocol, MCP, reach out to one of us on social media. Do not reach out to me on Twitter because I do not open Twitter. But email or...
You can't get DMs on Twitter anymore.
Oh yeah, we're not going to get DMs on Twitter anymore. So screw it, bro. Like, email us or message us on somewhere, because I want to get someone on here to talk about that. That is becoming bigger and bigger and MCPs are coming out every day. And now Figma has one and I'm like, dude, this is big. But I want to talk to someone who is actually working on that in Ruby right now. That would be really interesting. So... If you are one of those people or you know one of those people, let us know or let them know to let us know, because
I'm looking. Get in touch. I don't even know if our website has a contact form. I don't think so.
I pay for iCloud like premium or whatever, and they allow you to alias email addresses, which I'd never realized, but it was so freaking easy for me to create. Like when I was posting Ruby for All, it was so easy for me to create andrew@rubyforall.com and just have it send straight to like my main email.
That's nice. I've got the domain for Remote Ruby. We should probably set up emails for ourselves on there. I don't think I've just connected it to anything. So
you could do it straight through iCloud and then just, you can literally just add me to it. It's because I did that with Julie. Like I added her. I think very impressed with what they're doing over there.
Now that you mention it, I think Cloudflare has email forwarding or whatever for domains. That's like just forwards them over to whatever you
nice.
Want. So yeah, free and private way free. To create and manage email addresses. Create custom email addresses for your domain and route messages to your preferred inbox. Heck yeah.
Nice.
Well, maybe by the time this goes live, we'll have Chris@remoteruby.com and Andrew@remoteruby.com.
Or you can just make contact@remoteruby.com.
There you go.
Or do all three, because that's what I did.
Or we'll set up no reply at remote.
Yeah. They know what type of timing we're on. All right.
Thanks for letting me rant.
Yeah. Thanks for making me upset.
Thanks for hanging out. It has been a lot of fun to hang out at the conference.
Yes.
And just, you know, chill like the old days. That was very enjoyable.
Yeah. Shout out to Jason Sweat, because I have very much enjoyed every Sin City Ruby conference I've ever been to. And I'm sad to see it go.
But I've only been to the last one.
Well, I've been to all three, but didn't actually go to the second one. I just kind of hung out in Vegas and chilled, which is just as fun. I got home and I went to my favorite breakfast place, because I got home at like 7 or 8 in the morning. I have like the same waitress every time. And the very first thing she said to me was, "You look a lot more tan." And I'm like, that's because I was chilling by the pool, bro. The Lazy River wasn't open though, and that upset me because I really wanted to do that. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Same time, same great place, same great people.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.